Hi, this is Fraser. Before we get to the show this week, I'd like to take a moment to tell you about an important event that's happening next month in Glasgow, Scotland. My colleague Andrew Jewell and I are hosting an event called Technology for Excellence. You'll remember Andrew from previous shows. At the event, we'll be talking about some of the most important topics when planning a major technology transition in your school, including vision and planning, teacher development, deployment techniques, and support for pupils with additional needs. It's on September 11th in the Teacher Building, right in the heart of Glasgow. You can find out more and register at our website, technologyforexcellence.com. Now on with the show. This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have three sponsors for the show. The first is Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it easy to assign, collect, and review student work, and to provide rich feedback with annotations and voice notes and more. And our good friends at Jam Software, makers of the Casper Suite, management tool for Macs and iOS devices. And Aerohive, makers of cloud-managed controllerless Wi-Fi. And I'll tell you more about all of those sponsors as the show goes on. Bradley, big day. What's going on?
We launched our new website today.
Okay,
so, cool. So I ended up, I think we talked about it on the show, I really pushed for a Squarespace website, but we ended up going with an external company that did it in WordPress, and it looks very nice. There's some things I would really have about Squarespace, but you know, there are some things that WordPress can do because it's really, you know, you can kind of, there's always a plugin for it, you know, I guess it's kind of like the thing with WordPress. So it's pretty nice. It does have, it's not responsive, but it has a mobile version, which is certainly better than nothing. And responsive is obviously the ideal. But you're just trying to, are we trained our parents to a certain navigation style? Like, you know, you click here, then you go to that, and then that's changed slightly. And so you're just kind of fielding questions from parents like, hey, that's not on the website. And it's like, well, it is, but it's just
in a different place.
Just here. So we've had our last one for four years, I guess. We launched in 4 years ago. So people were used to it, but the new one's much better. So if you're interested, it's brainerdbaptistschool.org. And you can see my new yearbook photo on there as well. It's very exciting.
Cool. We've been tweaking our website a little bit this week as well in preparation for school starting. And we've been using Weebly.com for a couple of years. And I mean, it's okay, right? It's your standard sort of WYSIWYG website thing. But the biggest problem we've had with it is that their iOS app is terrible. And a lot of our teachers, obviously using iPads, want to, you know, blog. We have school blogs as part of that. And teachers want to blog from their iPad and things like that. And basically, the iOS app never really works correctly at all. So it's been very, very disappointing from that aspect. I mean, the website stuff is fine, but it's whatever. But the iOS app is just terrible. And this seems to be a sort of uniform thing with these kind of web hosting companies, is that the iOS apps never quite fulfill their potential.
And that's hard, too, because, like, you know, if you look at, say, WordPress on the web, and then you see, you know, and you got WordPress on the iPad, you know, the iPad is certainly like full featured, but you really need to know, if you're doing more than just like basic text, you really need to know, you know, HTML essentially, because that's what you're doing on the iPad app. And obviously on the web, you had the WYSIWYG editor, and it seems like there's an opportunity for someone to come along and build like a Weebly or a Squarespace or a WordPress that's like iOS first. I mean, again, Squarespace is, you know, they have a blog app. They don't necessarily have an app to manage your pages. You know, in WordPress, you can manage your blog and manage your pages. But it's not, you know, and I don't know if that's a limitation of like mobile Safari in itself, that they can't do some of those things. But, you know, there's that balance between, you know, trying to make it easy for people and basically building, let's be real, Microsoft Publisher on the web. Yeah. And then, but also then how do you get that to iOS where it is that easy? I don't know. It's like, I feel like there's a whole market on iOS for things like that. And then even if you like think about like programming, like there's not much of that you can do. Because, you know, obviously there's no Xcode for the iPad, but yeah, it's like, you know, where's a company going to come that's like iOS first on this?
Yeah. You got to wonder, you know, I mean, there's so much stuff is really easy on iOS and really well done. You sort of wonder, well, why can't, when you can do something as complicated as iMovie, how is it that the web's so hard? And I don't know if it's just, you know, the like resource requirements for complex HTML? Is it as simple as that? Is it just that, you know, iOS devices don't have enough RAM to, you know, to run a powerful web browser doing all the JavaScript and stuff that, that the desktop browsers can do so far? I don't know. Maybe it's that. But time will tell.
Yeah, you know, there, you look at things like MailChimp, and MailChimp on the desktop is like really great. It's fantastic. And then their iPad app is, you know, it's not, it's just, and it's not even, it's like not even what it's there for. It's meant to like work on drafts. You just, doesn't, I don't even think it has like a create a new newsletter button. Like it's really meant to work on drafts and to kind of manage your existing campaigns that you have in the queue. Yeah. And so you wonder if it's like something to do with how the text selection works, but it's like there's enough companies that are doing great things with this style of stuff on the web that their iOS apps are just okay, that you wonder if it is just a limitation of kind of, again, the RAM or maybe iOS itself.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder, is it a hardware thing? Is it an API thing? Or is it just a mentality thing? I mean, you look at this company like 37 Signals, who are sort of, you know, their whole thing when they started off was like, we are, you know, web first and we're, all the best apps are going to be on the web. And to a certain extent, that actually has been true on the desktop. That, you know, I think it was Charles Arthur in The Guardian had this great article a while ago. He said, you know, what was the last mass market application that launched on the desktop that wasn't a website? And I think in the end, they sort of worked back and it was basically iTunes in like 2000 or whenever that was the last kind of mass market thing that wasn't a game and wasn't a native application, or was a native application rather. But the same is not true in mobile. And I don't know if is it just a mentality thing? Like, is there somebody at MailChimp thinks that I don't want to start a campaign from an iPad? Like, why would that arbitrary distinction be there? I don't know. But I have my own bad things to say about MailChimp this week, actually. We use MailChimp at school, and we've been just setting up the new lists and stuff, and it's been interesting.
Yeah, MailChimp is... it's kind of like if you use it for what it's good at, you love it. Mm-hmm. But if you try to kind of go outside of that, then you're just banging your head against the wall. Well, what issues are you guys having?
Well, I mean, the problem we've got is that MailChimp doesn't let you do things with multiple lists. So if people haven't used MailChimp before, the idea is you get lists of emails and then you can send campaigns to those lists or subsets of those lists. So last year when we started using MailChimp, I had like a list for all the parents in the school, and then I made individual lists by hand for each class grouping in the school. So, you know, primary 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, and so on. And the problem with that, it wasn't a huge problem because people don't come and go that much from the school, but whenever somebody came to school, I'd have to put them into the all parents list and into their child's class list. And then, because then you couldn't say, well, the all parents list is the union of all the classes, because then some people got duplicate emails and so on and so on and so on. So this year, what I decided to do was to say, well, we're just going to have one list, and then I'm going to make segments of that list for parents for individual classes. So I did that. And then for each email address, I put in custom columns which said which classes their children were in. And then you can make a segment that is a sort of smart list, if you like, where it'll say, you know, if the recipient has this field and this field and this field, then put them in the segment. Problem is that there's an arbitrary limit of 5 conditions on the list, and I needed like 6 or 7 to cover certain groupings that I wanted to do. So if I wanted to pick out like 6 year groups worth of parents, I had to have 6 different conditions, and I could only have 5. And that was the point at which I was just sort of hitting my head off the desk going, why are these arbitrary limits here? So the way I got around that, actually, and this is something somebody tweeted it to me, is that MailChimp actually have an Adobe Air application called Hairball that lets you download your entire list and manipulate it with much more complex conditions in the Air app than you can do on the web, and then sort of upload that list as a static segment to your group, which is, I mean, that's another thing. Like, why is it so complicated that I have to get an Adobe Air app for that? Whereas, and you know, it's like, how many platforms are there, you know?
Like, if you need you think, like, is Adobe Air app, like, Adobe Air still a thing? Like, you know, it's kind of, what's the old saying? If you need Flash, you missed it, or something like that. It's like, if your app requires Adobe Air, like the last big app I remember on Adobe Air was, like, I think TweetDeck.
TweetDeck, yeah.
And I remember, do you remember Pounce? It was Kevin Rhodes's, like, you know, file sharing service, like that, I think, ran on Air. But, like, this is all stuff that was, like, in 2008. This is... Well, and that goes back to show, like, obviously they don't care much about the desktop app because what you're probably doing is an edge case, and their website kind of covers, you know, the mass market. But the thing about the web is it shouldn't have those limits.
Yeah, you think if you had bought, I mean, so many of the, I'm just at that stage in the preterm where I'm just like, I hate all software at all times, everywhere, and nothing is good and everything sucks. So, perhaps tonight's not the best night to talk to me about software.
Well, one of the things I realized on our, I don't know if I mentioned this on the last show, when I was uploading our student database into McGraw-Hill, it bumped every student up one grade. So the third grade, they put them, I mean, and I followed their template, like in the Excel sheet, you know, 3 meant third grade. And I didn't catch this on the upload, and it's not a huge deal because, you know, it just, now that we know, we just deal with it. But like third graders, it says like if you need to search for a third grader, you have to search by like fourth grade. Mm. Like fifth grader, you just search by sixth. And it's like, how was, you just look at problems like this and you just wonder, like, how are we still dealing with these problems?
That's called an off by one error, and you usually learn how not to do them in the first year of computer science course at university.
And when this is McGraw-Hill.
Go figure.
One of the largest educational companies. And I called them, like, I had fat fingered a couple of student last names, so I needed to delete some students and re-add them. And they said, well, there's really no way to delete students. And they said, we can't. And you just wonder, like, how do you not like think about things like this? But
Oh man. Yeah. Bruh.
So if we move on to tonight's topic, let's thank our first sponsor of the night.
Some actual software that doesn't suck.
Yes. We've got three of those. Fine folks at Aerohive Networks. Aerohive's back again this week. They unleash the power of enterprise mobility. Aerohive's technology enables organizations of all sizes to use mobility to increase productivity, engage customers, and grow their businesses. It's deployed over 13,000 enterprises worldwide. Aerohive's proprietary mobility platform takes advantage of the cloud and distributed architecture to deliver unified, intelligent, and simplified and cost-effective networks. The secret sauce of Aerohive is you get centralized management of your network, whether that's your wireless or your wired. There's no like controller. So there's no central point of failure, but you do have central management. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. You can host their software on your own network, or you can host it on their servers. It's, you know, a hosted solution. So again, if you want to learn more about that, go to aerohive.com. That's AEROHIVE.com. So we thank Aerohive for sponsoring the show this week.
You bet. If there's one thing I'm not worried about right now, it's what's going to happen with my Wi-Fi next week.
Well, you know, that's kind of what we wanted to talk about tonight, was a one-to-one health check. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For most schools that have deployed new technology, it doesn't even have to be just a new one-to-one deployment. It's like any new deployment that you're doing, like it's a health check. And so there are things you deal with, like, you know, when I say day one, I either mean the first day of school or the first day of real school. Because we all know, like, the first day of school, it's kind of like just getting started, getting back into the swing of things, kind of talking about the summer, laying out the year, laying out the semester. So your first real day of school is kind of like is go time for your deployment. And from schools I've talked to, you know, if they have issues on day one, it's not with their devices, it's with their network. And I don't know if your experience is the same.
It has been. Certainly last year when we did all of our we made that big transition for half the school to being on individual Apple IDs, and then the kids were installing their own apps on the devices. That was the day when our MDM server really struggled to keep up with demand because kids were just like, install. So we've had some of those issues. It was primarily due to having our Casper suite on too small an Amazon EC2 instance, and once we bumped up, it was fine. But yeah, we've certainly seen some of those issues before.
Well, and I think, you know, there are kind of, you know, really three things you can kind of happen. Number one is, you know, and I mentioned it is an MDM load. Especially like if you're pushing apps on day one, like everybody's coming back and your students are rolling out apps day one. You know, depending on if you, like you said, you've got your Casper on an Amazon server, or if you've got it in-house, maybe you underbought on the server you have. Maybe you didn't give it enough RAM, enough processing power. You know, that's the thing you can kind of do. And you can get past an MDM load. Like it may, you know, be slower for a little bit, but you're not putting that kind of load on it every day. But I think it's important to, you know, depending on who you're buying from, if you are doing a local solution, to make sure you buy the right kind of server. Don't try to go cheap to save $500 or to save $1,000, because it'll cause you frustration every time you try to do mass changes. And especially, you know, imagine a day where, you know, if you could do iOS software updates from your MDM. Well, that certainly changes what kind of load you're going to need.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, putting on EC2 is actually better if you screw it up, because then you can always get a bigger one. Whereas if you've bought actual hardware, obviously you're kind of stuck with what you've got. I was going to say that one of the ways that I dealt with that load situation was to limit the availability of certain apps, so that the students could only see a few apps and they could install a couple, like the key ones we needed, like iTunes U and Keynote or whatever, and later on roll out the other ones and make them available to different classes at different times, so that it wasn't just like, hey, everybody go ahead and just install the app right now, but in fact sort of stagger out over either a few hours or a day or so, depending on the size of your school.
Well, and again, this is, you know, if you're going to have an issue, this is one of those you can deal with. But, you know, it got me thinking that, I wonder if it would be possible for Apple to build that in where MDM vendors could, like, you know, basically do some sort of caching server, you know, combination with their MDM and like actually push it and say, okay, we're rolling to iOS 10 at this point, and actually push it to all your devices. That's certainly possible. And if it does require something with your MDM, like it is actually pulling it from the MDM, that could certainly cause a load.
Yeah, definitely.
Next thing is really bandwidth. I mean, do you have enough? You know, that's depending on what you're doing. If you're doing a lot of local stuff, well, then it doesn't matter what kind of bandwidth you have coming in. But, you know, do you have 1,200 students and you have 10 megs coming in? Like, obviously, that's going to be a problem. And depending on where you live, I don't know how you fix that. That's really one of those things that you should have been analyzing during the planning.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to what we said with our deployment series, one of the things we talked about in Vision and Plan was not only knowing what bandwidth you have, but also how much more you could theoretically get, and secondly, how long it takes to get that. So if it's going to be like a 10-week provisioning period before you can get your increased bandwidth, you may want to have a plan in place for that, you know, quite quickly. Whereas if, you know, there are some places schools are where they literally can't buy any more than they've got at the moment, so they just have to live with it and do some traffic shaping or whatever.
Yeah, those are problems that, like, I really am thankful I don't have to deal with, because, you know, any problem that I have with technology can largely be solved with money or a little brute force. But if you don't have bandwidth coming in and you can't get it, I don't know. That's very frustrating. And if you look at what an iPad typically does, and really any kind of modern computer, like we were saying, it's not about the local applications anymore. It's about what you can do leveraging the power of the cloud. And if you can't get any more, well, that's a problem. It's like if you can't buy any more gas for your car. Like, I mean, there's only so far you can take you.
Yeah. I mean, what we find, you know, looking at the network dashboard is that still the biggest source of traffic is just straightforward HTTP to the web. And then later on specific cloud services and things like that. But I still think that in a school context, a big play for the use of these devices is just accessing the web through the browser and then doing work in native applications as well. So in some ways, iOS is in quite a good position because you do have those native applications whose performance is not dependent on your external bandwidth at all in order to be useful at some level. And then you have access to, obviously, software updates and app updates and so on eat into that a little bit. But one of the ways you can solve that is actually if you only make that doable when the kids go home. So you say, take your device home and hit the update button when you get home. That's one way that some schools have gotten around that. But that only works if you're in an area or indeed in a country where most people aren't capped at home as well. And I had this discussion at a school in Cape Town where they had blocked access to the Apple update server on the campus, so the iPads couldn't see any new updates coming down. But then they were getting complaints from parents because kids would take the iPad home and then the iPad would overnight just blow through the home data cap as well. So even in some other regions, not typically mine or yours, Bradley, but certain other countries in the world, that can also be an issue if you send the devices home and try and solve the problem that way.
Well, and that'll be where you've got to invest in a caching server.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're just going to have to download it once and serve it out. Really, your next issue after MDM load and bandwidth is how's your Wi-Fi hanging around? Because, you know, if you've got a decent wired network, but you kind of go cheap on the wireless, maybe you don't plan properly, maybe you don't, you know, you've got too many access points, don't have enough. You know, you really, the iPad is a resilient device, but if it doesn't have a good Wi-Fi connection, you know, people are going to tell you. And if it takes too long to connect, if it's dropping connections, if like you've got way too many clients on an access point and no one can push traffic, you know, what do you do there? I mean, because most people think that if it's a Wi-Fi problem, it's an iPad problem. And so that makes your deployment look bad. When in reality, you just got a Wi-Fi problem. It's a huge problem, but it's not, it's just a single piece of your deployment.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is it fair to say that some Wi-Fi problems are huge problems and some are not, and some are just solved with the application of more base stations, but other problems can be more fundamental than that. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah. And also it could also be solved with the removal of access points. Like if you, if you've got way too much interference, say on 2.4 gigahertz, maybe taking an access point down, or maybe even just lowering the power level of an access point. Maybe, and that's where, you know, bringing in, if you're not, you know, skilled with this, bringing in a VAR that can kind of help you with this, even on the front end, to kind of help you like understand, you know, how the bleed over is, and maybe funnel your floor plans into a site survey software. And you can say, okay, we expect to have this many clients in this room, and but we've got access points below it and beside it, and we estimate we're going to have some code channel interference on channel one on 2.4. So you could actually like say lower the power cell, the power size, like the, you know, of the actual APs, so they don't broadcast as far. And so that's where, like, if you really did have some high throughput requirements, that's really how you do it. And so the APs just don't, the iPads don't see as many APs. Instead of seeing, you know, four or five, they may see two APs, and they can roam quicker as well.
Yeah, no, that's a good tip as well. And I think one of the things, and this is something that I'm sort of facing in the next week, is whenever your year groups change, like you roll over to new school year, you have to reevaluate that planning as well. Because if you have, like in our school in particular, we have classes of sometimes quite varying sizes, and they get combined for different subjects in different places in different ways each year. And what can happen sometimes is, you know, in the course of last year, well, I knew that in this one room, we only ever had a class of 10 or 15 or whatever. And now we're actually combining several classes, and we're going to put a big group of, say, drama students in there, and there's going to be 25 devices in there, and how does that handle, and so on and so on. So it's worth just bearing in mind that that's not a once and always done problem. That's something you have to reevaluate every time the sort of configuration of classes and rooms changes around.
Yeah, we ran into that this year where we now have 3 fourth grade classes and just 2 third grade classes. So we have a third grade classroom that's empty that I really don't need coverage in anymore. And so take an AP out that was kind of really serving that room, and no one has less, you know, it's not like the signal on any device is shorter, but you just kind of remove some congestion in the airways. Because that's really the name of the game with Wi-Fi is opening up the airways. You can imagine it's like, you know, Wi-Fi, if you can imagine like your switches, okay, and, you know, Ethernet is plugged in, everybody has their own door back home to the internet. With Wi-Fi, everybody's going in on one door, essentially. And so you've got to kind of get in an orderly line to get through that door. And so you're just trying to create, you know, kind of freeing up airtime. Now, one of the things that's nice about, you know, as you do think about moving to 802.11ac or even possibly turning off 2.4 in the future, depending on your requirements, is you have a lot more channel variety. So like in 2.4 gigahertz, as I mentioned, you've got 3 non-overlapping channels, 1, 6, and 11. But on 5 gigahertz, depending on what country you live and how far you live from the airport, you may have anywhere from like 19 to 23. And that was one of the things when I had my Aero Hive SE out here recently, and he turned on basically like there's some – if you live a decent ways away from the airport, you can turn on some additional channels, and so you get more 5 gigahertz channels. So, you know, if you live like really close to the airport or your school is, and you kind of have to watch that a little bit because that can impact some like the radar technology – you know, again, that's kind of crazy to think that our Wi-Fi could impact airports, but it certainly can. But yeah, just, you know, this is where if you struggle, lean on your VARs. I mean, that's where, you know, you're not buying these products. Certainly your Wi-Fi, you're not buying them through a manufacturer. You're going through a VAR. And so even if you didn't plan well on the front end, get them back in there to help you. Like, you bring them in during the school and have them walk around and monitor things and make course corrections. You know, maybe it costs you $500 to $1,000 to do that, but it's certainly better to do that and just chalk it up to learn that for next time than to have a bad Wi-Fi network that really, really impacts your, not only your deployment, but your deployment satisfaction, or we call it customer sat.
Customer sat. Yeah.
Deployment sat, I guess, is a better word.
Deployment sat. That's amazing.
Matt, yep. I'm going to register that domain name. Deployment sat.
Teacher sat.
Teachersat.com. Yeah. Or dot in. No, what's one of the new ones? Like dot tips? Teachersat.tips.
Dot sexy.
Yes.
Yes, no, teachersat.sexy is not going to work.
Probably be blocked.
No. It's not going to work. Yeah. Moving on.
Yes. Let's thank our next sponsor of the night. Fine folks at Jamp Software. Again, we've talked about Casper Suite tonight. You and I are both customers. They actually sent me a couple. Did you get pens when you bought your Casper Suite?
I did not. No.
I got two nice pens in the mail today from them. Not like writing pens, but like pens you clip onto a jacket.
Okay.
To send you a picture to rub it in. Fine folks at Jamp provide IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. They also work with enterprise companies as well. They have a great app for teachers called Casper Focus. Teachers get to kind of manage their classroom's iPads right from their iPad. So they can quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to the class. They can choose and distribute iBooks, and they can even initiate AirPlay right from within the app. It's called Casper Focus on the App Store. If you want to learn more about Jamp Software and the Casper Suite, go to addaschool.net, and there's a link in the show notes. So this is episode 99, and that'll let the fine folks from Jamp know that you came to them from our show. So thanks to Jamp Software for sponsoring Out of School this week.
I have a little bit of follow-up on MDM if you want to hear it.
Remember
last week we were talking about how we're moving over to managed distribution for all of our codes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the last step in this whole process is to email Apple and ask them to convert all of our previous purchases from redeemable coupons into managed distribution licenses, which I did. There's a little form on the iTunes or the App Store support website where you go in and you just say, I want to migrate to managed distribution, and then put in some information about the Apple ID that bought the device, the coupons and so on. And so far it hasn't quite happened yet, but the reason it hasn't happened yet is because I got an email back saying, here are all the criteria you need to go to managed distribution, and it listed things like having an MDM, having individual Apple IDs and so on. And it said, are you really, really, really sure you want to do this? To which I wrote back and said, yes, I'm really, really sure you want to do this. And then I got another email back saying, can you really confirm that you're absolutely sure you want to do this and this whole process is irreversible? So after that, I kind of sat on it for a day going, am I really sure? I've done all the work. There's no possibility of me being able to back out now. But eventually today I wrote back and said, yes, I understand that this is irreversible and please turn them all into managed distribution codes. Thank you. So hopefully that will show up at some point in my MDM. And I can start pushing out apps. Fingers crossed.
You got to wonder, like, did someone do it and didn't mean to, or did not realize what they were doing?
Oh, I know people who have done it already. Because when you can still go into the volume purchase portal and you can, you get the choice of getting a spreadsheet coupon, a coupon of spreadsheets, or you get a managed distribution license. And I know some people who were using Apple Configurator, but paid their money and chose managed distribution licenses and then realized that they couldn't deploy them. I think there's now some more warning text in there saying you have to have an MDM server that manages da da da. There's still a little bit of confusion going on over that, but fingers crossed that we will get all our licenses over.
Well, I guess if you're not on like next week's show, it means you're fired and you're living in a cave because you screwed
pretty,
up.
Pretty much, I'm sleeping on a park bench.
Yep. And who will do the doc? We can do a Kickstarter for the documentary. That'd be great. The Rise and Fall of Fraser Spears.
The Rise and Fall.
So now I think two things here. Don't blame Apple if your network sucks. Now that's internally to your teachers and that's externally to parents. You know, one of the things that I've realized, you know, being in a school for 5 years is what people say to parents, even in joking, they take as the gospel.
especially in technology.
Exactly. And yeah. So if you say, yeah, our iPad deployment's really rough right now because Apple hasn't updated. Apple has a bug in their Wi-Fi that they haven't fixed. You know, and not that like Apple's Wi-Fi drivers are not perfect, but like, who do you think is at fault if your deployment sucks? It's probably not Apple. Like, if there was a Wi-Fi bug that was really holding up your deployment, unless it's like extreme, some sort of like complicated security and roaming technology, like they would have fixed it because it would be affecting everybody. And so it's don't blame Apple if like you didn't do your network properly or you didn't take the time to plan properly. And so because if you like kind of complain about it to parents, that makes the school look bad. And there's nothing that like kind of, you know, you'll say to a parent, yeah, Apple's got this bug that, you know, is kind of making our iPad deployment terrible right now. That could easily, within days, be that you guys are canning the whole project because Apple's iPads stink. I mean, and you laugh, but that could easily happen.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you're a technology person and that's the kind of line you're giving people, then that reflects badly both on you, but also it reflects badly on the school management as well. Like, whoever signed off on that purchase order and that plan and that whole thing, you're sort of essentially saying, well, these people bought stuff that sucks. You know, and it looks bad all the way up. So, I mean, I agree with you, Bradley. It's not to say that Apple stuff never has bugs. I mean, goodness sake, the iOS 7 transition with supervision profiles was very, very difficult. And that genuinely was Apple's fault. But, you know, take it on the chin, right? You know, there's an issue. There's a network issue. Maybe it's Apple. Maybe it's not. I mean, I had an issue a while ago where I was actually convinced that there was something very fundamentally wrong with Apple's Wi-Fi drivers on iOS. And it turned out there wasn't. It was that I had forgotten to turn off one of the radio rate settings on all my access points, and they were roaming, or they were not roaming as fast as they should have been. But I didn't go around blaming, you know, even though I sort of did think for a while that it was Apple's bug, I didn't tell people that because I just kept saying I'm working on it.
And that's the thing. None of our networks are perfect. Like, you could talk to my teachers, like, nothing's perfect. Does Apple, you know, one of the things I've noticed about the Mac specifically, and really Yosemite I've noticed in the beta, is it takes a while for DHCP sometimes on the Mac, on Wi-Fi. Like, I don't know if it gets like super asleep, but like, and it happens at home and at work. I've noticed on Yosemite, like, it can take 6 or 7 seconds to actually like attach to the AP and do DHCP. And I've noticed that here, like, sometimes it's like it wakes up and it's like kind of can't find the network, and then it finds it and you're good to go. But most people just open it up and click Safari without even, especially on the MacBook Air, because there's really no kind of, you know, wake up period. You just click Safari, you're good to go. Well, then it says no internet connection. Well, 3 seconds later, it's connected, and then they have to hit refresh. And is that something weird about the Mac? I guess, but it also is like you can wait 5 seconds. Like, it's, if that's the worst thing you have to do is wait 5 seconds for it to connect, that's, you know, a huge problem. Like, I know on the iPad it seems to connect faster. So again, that's not a huge problem, and it's nothing. Don't blame Apple. Just again, say if you have a real issue, like, just say we're working on it and we're working with Apple, we're working with our vendors, try to isolate the issue and fix it and move on. But blaming someone else, again, like you said, just makes it look like you didn't do your homework in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there are bugs, and it's fair to apportion blame to whoever's fault it is. But the thing I find a little more kind of infuriating is when, you know, people sort of, they start a deployment and then they run into something that has been true of iOS for like 6 years. And then they go, oh, well, Apple has done this and Apple has done that. And, you know, it's like, well, yeah, Apple did make that decision, but you knew about that because that's been true since iOS 2, right? You know, so, you know, whether or not it's, you know, I had somebody a while ago who was sort of like, well, they came back to me after a deployment had kind of started and they were like, oh, we've had an absolute nightmare because of these badly architected machines because blah, 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 something about getting photographs off over USB. I was like, well, yeah, but you did know that when you started, you know, that hasn't changed. So, you know, go figure.
Yes. Well, and so oftentimes the complaints I hear about things about iOS are like are complete first world problems. It's like, you're really complaining about that. someone's talking today. It's like, they couldn't attach 17 pictures to a single email. And it's not even that it was the mail server. Like, if you click 17 pictures in the photos album, it won't, and you do the share sheet, like mail isn't an option, obviously, because there's no mail server that will allow you to send that, not even Google. If you figure like the average iPhone photo, maybe two megs. It's like obviously like in the perfect world, those things would be fine, but it's not a perfect world. And again, like you said, the process of getting, you know, bulk getting pictures off of, you know, camera roll, or, you know, like I had somebody today that was trying to install Kirby for their child, but had disabled Safari. Well, you have to have Safari enabled to install Kirby because you can only install configuration profiles through Safari.
Yeah.
Well, they'd forgotten the restrictions passcode, and they were kind of like asking me, like, "What do I do?" It's like the only thing you can do is wipe it, and then you can tell they're kind of irritated. But it's like that's no one's fault but your own. Like you forgot the code. That's like
Has Apple got such good security?
Right. And aging? If you lose the keys to your house, is that your builder's fault? No, it's like you just lost the keys. Like,
at least there is a way back, right? It's not like you're bricking the device, but
right.
Yeah.
Did I tell you I lost my checkbook?
No.
I did.
What's the checkbook again?
I know. I wrote the check for the down payment on our car, and then my checkbook went missing for 2 weeks. And I only had 3 checks left in the book. So it's like, it was fine. Like, nothing was coming out of our account. Like, I knew it was at home somewhere because I didn't go anywhere else after I came home from buying the car. And we decided not to put a stop payment on the check because it was like close to $40. And it's like, $40. If it was like 20, I would have done it, but 40 is a little bit more than I wanted to spend. Well, this week, you know who found it? My 1-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he found it.
He put it there.
I don't know where, but he found it because he was playing with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Kids.
Rat hole right there. So, you know, so we're kind of through the day one, the first week stuff is like this is all brand new. So now I kind of want to transition into like after the first month, like you're in month two, school's going, the plane's in the air, everything's kind of humming along as it needs. Like, what are you doing? Like, how's your deployment going? If you step back and like, you've hopefully fixed all the showstopper network issues. What's your next step on kind of a health check? Like, how are you doing? And this is something you could do really once every 9 weeks, once a semester. Just kind of take a step back, analyze your information, log into your Wi-Fi, log into your MDM, and look at it. So what are the steps you could do there? One of the first things I wrote down is, how often are you pushing new apps? Like, do you have, you obviously have the peak app day in deployments, but like how often are you doing apps? Like, and again, that goes back to your MDM load. Maybe your MDM barely survived day one, but it's probably, maybe it's fine now because you're not pushing new apps every single day. And you don't have apps that are a gigabyte that are going out to the entire school, just step back and look at that.
And one of the things I'm looking forward to with managed distribution is the ability to push apps to students when they're off my network, which is going to be really great because, half the kids take their iPad home. So I can assign an app to them, say, like at 6 o'clock at night or something, and they're likely on home Wi-Fi, and that app will download to their devices wherever they are on the internet. It's going to be really cool. That kind of thing. And also working with your teachers a little bit to kind of know what they need in advance. And also, if you're in the first month of your deployment or whatever, particularly if you're a brand new deployment, what you'll find is the teachers just want app after app after app after app all the time. And I think I've come to the conclusion that this is actually just a thing that teachers do who are new to iPad. And I don't think I've known many schools that have not gone through this and come out the other side after time. But what happens very often is you see teachers... they just think that what they need next is another app. And we try very hard when we talk to schools and teachers to try and sort of walk them back from that attitude and say, well, no, start with a few apps, modify a few things, make sure your practice is good, make sure what you're doing in the classroom is good, and then add on other apps as you know you need them. But we went through the same thing. The first year we put out like 150 apps. So you're going to have a system to sort of manage the flood of requests, particularly if you're a brand new iOS school.
Yeah, because you see those classes or those seminars at conferences, like the 20 apps you need for your classrooms. Like, you don't need 20 apps for your classroom. Like, it's like, do you need 20 textbooks? No, you don't need 20 textbooks.
20 is a small number compared to some of the things I've seen. I mean, I've seen blog posts like, 51 apps for creative writing on iPad. Like 50 apps for one thing. I was like, no.
You need one writing app.
Yeah, it's called Pages and it's free. Come on.
Right. It's the app. Well, and I think Do you get the sense that, like, the if a teacher's, you know, is kind of nervous about the iPads in his or her classroom, that if they have a lot of apps and the kids always have an app to work on, they can say, okay, we're going to this app today, work here. That's almost a safety net to them on, like, they can say, well, we're using apps in the classroom.
Oh, very, very much so. You know, I think, and I don't want to be, I don't mean to be critical of anybody here, because I think it's part of the learning process for the teacher as much as for the student. But I think you're right that what you'll see is that people, they'll bring in, like, you know, skill and drill kind of applications, where it's like, here's an app that will test you 20 times on maths or something like that. And it's, we'll do our normal work, or we'll do our actual proper work, whatever that means. And then when you're done, you can go on the iPad and do this extension task on the iPad. And I think the mark of a truly confident and mature one-to-one iPad teacher or one-to-one computing teacher is that they don't feel like the iPad is the thing you do after you've done your real work. They think that the iPad is the thing you use to do your real work in the first place. And that's what I look for when I come into school and I look at what teachers are doing, is I say, well, how much is the iPad an add-on to the real work on paper, and how much is the iPad actually the vehicle for the real work? And I think in that latter case, that's what tells me that a teacher is mature and confident in what it is they're doing with the iPad in the classroom.
Yeah, that's totally agree. And that's where we really are in our spelling, in our, you know, like in second, third, and fourth grade. We use a service called Spelling City, and we're getting to where their spelling tests are done on Spelling City. All the review work done on Spelling City. Like, it's not... Spelling City is the vehicle for spelling comprehension. Like, we, you know, that's how we do it. The words go in there. Kids have a login they can access from home. Teachers can review their progress. Like, it's no longer, it's not a game after we actually do the in-class lesson. Like, it is part of the in-class lesson. And that's, you're right. That's where technology becomes less about the technology and more just like, well, that's just what we do. It's just another tool.
Yeah. That's what I want to see all the time. It's not to say that everything has to be through the technology, but that the technology is not a special thing we do from time to time. Or if you're a good boy, you'll get on the iPad or whatever. This is the fundamental intellectual tool of our generation, and we're all going to use it for our work. End of story.
Before we move on, let's thank our last sponsor. It's Shobi. Shobi is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign and collect and review student work on their iPads. They can then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly on the documents. Students can show their work by submitting to Shobi from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobi's built-in tools. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobi Basic is free, and teachers can try it out on their iPad with their students in just a few minutes. So you can go to outofschool.net, and there's a link in there for teachers. Now, if you're a school administrator or an IT professional, Shobi is offering a special deal for listeners of this podcast. If you go to outofschool.net, you can click the link for IT professionals, or you can go to shobibot.com/out of school. That's shobie.com/out of school. And what they'll do is, if you buy Shobi Pro for 5 of your teachers, they will give you an extra 5 for free for the school year. So that's buy 5, get 5 free for the school year. So again, go to outofschool.net and look for the administrator link, or go to shobie.com/out of school for details. So one of the next things I had was damage, kind of assessing your damage. Mm-hmm. We talked about that heavily, like our damage ratio. To look at where are you at so far with that. Have you had any damage? Hopefully you've had none. But if so, how do you document it?
Yeah, and can I just throw in here a plea not to crucify the first child who breaks the iPad? You know, somebody's going to be the first, right? And you may have a good idea who it might be already. I don't know, but damage is going to happen, and don't make it that, you know, one child in your school is always remembered as the first child ever to smash their iPad in the school since we had them. It happens. Just deal with it discreetly and, you know, move on. You should have a policy in place already. If you've listened to our previous shows, you'll have a policy in place for handling that. Use it as an opportunity to test your policy, right? Make sure it works.
Yeah, it's kind of like, to me, I look at it as like the first kid that pops a basketball for the year, pops a kickball. Like, it's just, that's what spares are for. That's what your policy is for. Like, it's going to happen. you know, if it was me and I was giving you advice, I would document all your damage, like you document mm-hmm. the date, you know, is it the fault of the student, serial number of the damage unit, and then, you know, keep track of the status. Like, did you send it off for repair? Was it beyond repair? You know, when did you get the replacement in, and what's the serial number of the replacement? And just document that. You're going to take 5 minutes probably to do this, but if you have that documentation there, it's very helpful if you ever need it.
It's helpful for a couple of reasons. One, you know, if you've got a lease situation and you are tracking serial numbers, you need to be able to say which ones went away and which ones are the replacements. The second thing is, it will be useful for you when you come to renew your lease or do another deployment. You know, it's been very helpful for me this year to be able to look back at the previous 3 years and go, yeah, it was 2% damage per year. Therefore, we need this number of spares roughly, and so on and so on. So that kind of information is very, very helpful. And it's good to know that. And it's not just helpful for that, but also good just in conversation with other, you know, with other colleagues and other people interested in the whole topic. To be that fact that I can go to schools and I can say, here are the actual numbers. And not only here are the numbers, but I can actually tell you what happened to all six or eight or whatever it was of those devices over 3 years. That's very influential to other people who want to hear about this kind of story. The fact that I can say we did 2% damage. And, you know, there are certainly some stories from other schools who have used other platforms where I've heard of, you know, much, much higher numbers than that. And that can be a very influential conversation to have.
Next thing is, what are your teachers saying? You know, we've said before, it's like, go have, you know, quote unquote, have coffee with your folks. One of the things that I started doing last year and I found it very helpful was, like, I typically don't eat in the cafeteria. I typically will either work out during lunch or eat my ship my door, eat my office, and either work on something for this podcast or work on my blog, something like that. But, you know, make it a point on occasion to go to the cafeteria, eat with your teachers, just talk to them, and you'll find out mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe, again, everything with your deployment is working, you know, pretty good, but maybe there's like a minor thing that's annoying to them or it's frustrating to them that you could actually fix. And they may not want to take the time to let you know about that otherwise. So just like take the time to go talk to them and not even ask, like, hey, is anything broken? Just be there and something may mm-hmm. come to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that comes up from that quite a lot is that teachers don't always realize what's possible in terms of management. So, for example, they don't understand, and, you know, I've never sat down and talked to all my teachers, here are all the controls I can put in place on an iPad. I chose the ones that I thought were most appropriate and have tweaked them based on feedback over the years, but you know, nobody except me is conversant with the full range of controls. So, for example, you know, somebody might say to me, well, you know, this kid, his apps never appear on his device for some reason. And I can investigate that and find out that it's because he's signed out of the school Apple ID and he's signed into some other Apple ID. And then I can maybe apply the control that says, you know, don't allow any changes to accounts. The teacher didn't know that was an option that I could fix. They didn't even know that I could fix that for them. But by hearing that story about this child whose iPad never quite worked the same as everybody else's, I discover that they've been doing something that other children hadn't figured out to do or had decided not to do. And I can actually put something in place for that student that can help them not do that in the future.
You know, one of the ways that I'm kind of judged here, like in my, I don't get like a traditional performance review, but like, you know, obviously the headmaster obviously sees how I do, but also our teachers have board reps, like our school trustees. So each mm-hmm. Each teacher has, like I think it's like each grade has a board rep that they meet with, you know, I think probably quarterly, and to check. And it's really as much a review of the headmaster as it is anything, but they ask them, like, hey, you know, how's the office staff helping you guys? And so the joke I make to teachers now when they say thanks, I say, don't tell me, tell your board rep. And they know I'm joking, but like that's, you know, I think I say that in a way to let them know, like, I work for you. Like, it's not like I'm taking time out of my job to come help you. Like, part of my job is helping you. So if you feel like I'm doing a good job, like, I appreciate if you tell the school board or the headmaster when you meet, if you know, meet with him, like, hey, Bradley is very helpful. He helps us quickly. We appreciate him. Like, don't be afraid to kind of to let them know, like, I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even just a walk around the building at the end of the day, every day for the first week is, you know, just be visible, right? You know, like the police, just be visible.
Yeah, just be
reassure
seen,
people.
Yeah. Be seen in the halls. I do that a lot in the mornings. Like I'll just, once I get in, get settled in, I'll just kind of walk in, pop into some classrooms, just, you know, say good morning. And, you know, a lot of times if like there is, hey, I've got a quick question for you while you're here. Like, you know, I want to be able to do that because instead of the teacher like forgetting or having to take time to call me later or come see me later, like I'm right here. I can take care of it right now. Just you're right. Be visible.
Yeah. And it's super helpful for you as well, just to get those things off your plate instead of having a to-do list build up.
Right. Again, teacher buy-in here is really key. And you mentioned earlier, you know, you can mention your teachers, like if there are issues, don't complain to parents, complain to me. Cause complaining to parents is going to undermine the entire thing. You know, we really, when we rolled out some new curriculum a few years ago, we kind of hit that home to our teachers. Like if you have questions or concerns, don't complain to parents. Cause if the parents hear you complaining, they will use that as ammunition. Even if you think that you're their friend outside of school, they will use that as ammunition.
Yeah, you don't want to air that dirty linen in public if you don't have to.
Exactly.
And you never have to. You never have to.
Exactly. Exactly. Just, you know, you listen and say, well, you know, let me go look into that. Let me talk to someone about that. We'll get this handled for you. You know, if you are a teacher and parents complain to you, I have it written down here, let the DRI know, the directly responsible individual know. Like if teachers have if parents say, you know, hey, you guys are pushing apps at night and we don't have a fast internet connection. It's slowing down Netflix at night. Like that's something you kind of want to know. Like those are the things that teachers don't hold that in. Like email whoever manages your deployment. And so you can look at that, your policy there. Like, is this the best thing? Should we push these out at home? Can we schedule? Does your MDM support scheduling so we can push them out at 4 a.m. when no one's watching Netflix? I don't know. Can the Casper Suite do that? Can you schedule apps to be installed at a certain time?
I think the answer to that is no. If you change the VPP allocations, it basically does that straight away.
That would be
one of the things. One of the things I learned about that was while I've been going through this process is that there's not two separate steps. One for assigning the app to the Apple ID, and one for then pushing it to the device. It's all based around the automatically install application setting, so that if automatically install new purchases is turned on, the act of the MDM associating the app with the Apple ID causes the device to download it. So whenever you assign the app, it will, if those devices have that setting turned on, they will instantly download the app. So what you might do in that situation is you might say to that student, turn off that setting. And then you can just manually pull down that app whenever it suits you from your purchase tab rather than having it pushed automatically to the device.
Yeah, good workaround if you know, it could be an edge case where it is very, if it's a big app. But that would be a nice feature. Like if you could can do that, say like with your Aerohive network, you can say, okay, activate this firmware at midnight. I don't know. That'd be a neat feature.
I shall file a bug report. Or feature request.
Yeah, feature request, I guess. Last thing I have is really watch your network. You know, we talked about that earlier, especially your wireless network. Like, kind of take a step back and look through your system. Hopefully you have a system that kind of gives you information for troubleshooting and say, like, do we have co-channel interference anywhere? Like, do we have a classroom that we didn't give it, it doesn't have enough signal strength that maybe there's too more concrete than we thought, and we maybe need to relocate an AP. So just like take a step back and look at that stuff and, make those course corrections along the way. Don't think you can only modify your Wi-Fi network during the summer because it could be a long year if you've got something you could easily fix.
Yeah, and particularly towards the start of the year, there's things you want to look at as well to do with, which users are using the most bandwidth, which applications are using the most bandwidth. If with Aerohive, you can do that. I'm sure with other Wi-Fi services, you can do that too. Last year, we had some interesting issues where certain students were using a lot of Netflix bandwidth during the day. And that was detected and discussed and stopped. But that's the kind of thing that happens at the start of the year, right? There's always a kind of short-term spike in petty abuse. Newly minted older children try and see how far they can push things and whether or not you actually can detect what they're doing and so on and so on. So just keeping an eye on that and looking at how much bandwidth is being used overall and also making sure that enough is being used, because if you don't see those numbers going up, you might want to know why you're not seeing the kind of usage that you might expect as well.
Because that could indicate a frustration somewhere in the classroom, so they're just not being used.
Yeah, yeah. So you can poke around on that as well and see, why is that classroom being as quiet as it has been when it's busy every day? You know, why is nobody using the devices in there? Is there a problem? And just sort of wander in and check.
So, yeah, that again, health checks for your deployment are very helpful. You don't want to let these things kind of fester on for the entire school year. If you have issues, deal with them immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing I would probably throw in as well is just wander around and check Apple TVs. You know, Apple TVs can get a bit finicky at times, particularly if you do a lot of network work over the summer and, you know, bonjour names get conflicted at times and stuff. So one of the things I'm going to do actually tomorrow after we record this is go around the school and just make sure all the Apple TVs are up to date and that they've got the correct names as well. Because this is another thing, if you move classrooms around, the name of the Apple TV in that classroom might also have to change. You know, so we've got one classroom that used to be primary 5 and 6 and it's now primary 4 and 5. So I'm going around and renaming those Apple TVs for the actual classes that are going to be in that room that year as well.
Yeah, it'd be nice when we can pull these things off the network. Peer-to-peer?
Oh, I cannot wait for that. I mean, I think there's so many things. That, along with AirDrop between iOS and Mac, oh my goodness, it's going to be great.
Good fall.
It's going to be great.
Well, do you want to leave it there for this week?
Let's leave it there for this week. There's plenty of work to be done before school opens up. We're recording this on Tuesday night, and we're open up Thursday morning. So I am just about there. Except for getting the managed distribution licenses converted over at last, and then we'll push out apps as we see fit. It's going to be an interesting test. I mean, I'm sort of deliberately doing that this year to try and to sort of test managed distribution as we go. So when the teachers get the new iPads, they'll basically have no apps on them. And then as teachers request from me, I will start to push out more apps as time goes by and just see how that goes. And it better go well because I don't have a second plan. I get no plan B for that.
There's no plan B. There's only plan A.
Failure's not an option.
I'm ChambersDaily.com on the web, and I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and Spears.org on the web. And we'll talk to you next week.